You're listening to This Motorcycle Life, conversations about why we ride. Episode 3, We Happy Few. I'm Bruce Philp. Thanks for listening. Well, Robert Pirsig died this week at the age of 88. The author of Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance left a remarkable legacy to this sport, and no doubt inspired more than a few new riders and a few epic journeys in the decades since it was published. Motorcycle forums all over the internet marked the moment, with riders sharing either how the book had changed their lives or how completely baffled they were by its incessant navel-gazing. Either way, the event showed once again what a close-knit community motorcycle riders can be, and coming up, we're going to do some navel-gazing of our own about why that is. But first, some important business. I want to acknowledge the promotional support of my friends at Eat Sleep Ride. The stories in these podcasts are about riders just like you and me, and Eat Sleep Ride is a great place to get to know them. You can discover this online community and magazine at eatsleepride.com, and as an avid user, I can also recommend that you download their super useful free app at your preferred app store. And I'm excited that my guest for this episode is one of the founders of ESR. You'll get to meet her shortly. Okay, let's go. So I woke up one morning recently to find that raccoons had undertaken some renovations to our barn, which I wouldn't mention, except that it meant I had to rent some equipment to repair the damage. And I wouldn't mention that, except that it was a lovely spring day, and so I decided to ride to the equipment rental company in the next town over to arrange what I needed. I went in, helmet in hand, reserved the equipment, paid the bill, and turned to leave. It was a few seconds before I realized that the guy behind the counter was following me out to the parking lot. It turned out that he and his wife ride. He just wanted to see my bike and talk to a kindred spirit for a few minutes. He hadn't asked, it just went without saying. We hadn't been introduced, but it was understood that we were family, and permission was not necessary. Well, I've got 1,000 stories like that, and I'll bet you have too. It's one of my favorite things about riding a bike, and it seems to be one of the most fundamental. Even seasoned riders who've grown cynical about the latest machines and the fanciest gear, and even the high milers who are long past caring how cool it all is, still maintain their reverence for the community of motorcyclists, still salute each other when they pass on the road, almost no matter what they're riding. And this sense of brotherhood and sisterhood is, to me, all the more remarkable in an era when people everywhere seem more focused on their differences than on what unites them, and when road users seem to be getting less civil every day. Well, I've been curious about why that is, about why the idea of community is such a core part of the riding experience, and I knew somebody who might have some interesting answers. Marina Mann is co-founder and the CEO of Eat Sleep Ride, a job that puts her in contact with just about every tribe in motorcycling. I figured she'd seen it all, and she did not disappoint. Here's our conversation. Hey, Marina.
Hi, Bruce.
Thanks for coming on the show on this beautiful, very motorcycle riding friendly day. I understand you did not ride today, but I hope that I carried your spirit along with me when I did. She was a beaut. So again, thanks for coming on this show. As I told you when we spoke beforehand, I want to talk a little bit about the sort of sisterhood and brotherhood of motorcycling, and I thought that you might have a particular point of view on this that was a little bit expert and pretty experienced. And here's the reason. So I was looking for your email address the other day, and I found a note that we had an exchange a few years ago in which I invited you to my book launch. And you couldn't make it because you were up to your neck in this new startup called Eat Sleep Ride. And I think it has a little bit to do with community. And I'm just curious to know, what did Eat Sleep Ride turn out to be?
Well, Eat Sleep Ride, or ESR, is a platform for motorcycle riders. So our product, our premier product, I guess you could call it that, is called Eat Sleep Ride Motorcycle GPS, is a mobile app for motorcycle riders. And our mission has always been to get more motorcycle riders riding more bikes more often. And we wanted to build a technology to help us do that. And with the ESR app, I guess what we're doing is we're harnessing the wisdom of the collective motorcycle rider And we're enabling tools that make it easier for motorcycle riders to get the most out of their seat time, like ride sharing, great motorcycle roads that can be found nearby, and safety built in with a technology called CrashLight, which is a crash detection technology. Actually, the idea for CrashLight came out of a trip that we did once to the Tail of the Dragon in the Blue Ridge Parkway. It's like a legendary motorcycle road in Virginia that runs about 500 miles of parkway along a ridge. And we arrived at a visitor center, and we hooked up with a group of riders who were on a memorial ride for a friend. And a year earlier, they were out riding the parkway when a friend went off the road without any sign. Like, there wasn't even a skid mark on the road. And police and friends searched the 500 miles of parkway for days before calling off the search. And later, a few months later, a hunter found the deceased rider and his bike. And after an autopsy, they learned that the rider was alive for a few days, but was unable to move his body or call for help. And with our understanding of mobile technology, we thought we should be able to build a solution for this so that this didn't happen to anyone again. And CrashLight was born, and it sort of rounded off the whole tool set for the Eat, Sleep, Ride motorcycle GPS app.
And I'm a dedicated user. The Tail of the Dragon is a road that haunts my dreams, I have to say. Now it's going to haunt my nightmares a little bit. But what a terrible story, and what a great way to react to it. And then you have an online magazine as well, right? Which is kind of a community in itself.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to. I guess we started out with the magazine, and in essence, we felt like there was so much knowledge in the community. The wisdom of the average motorcycle rider is so deep, and we felt like that wisdom was being lost. That there was no way to collect these stories of experiences among riders. And so we created this platform where people can just sign up and create their ride story, create their a post about their ride experience, about how they can fix a bike, how they can build a bike. And really, it's turning into an awesome collection of great writing about the motorcycle experience and helpful tools and articles for motorcycle riders that ride all different types of bikes. It's really bike agnostic.
Yeah, which is something I want to ask you about a little bit later on. That's one of the things that I love about it. And I have to say, I mean, the Eat, Sleep, Ride community has been very kind to this podcast, and people have been quite encouraging and quite gentle about it. So I'm a fan on a whole new level. Now, this is not your first experience with online communities. I think when we first met a bunch of years ago, you were active in social media consulting, and I'm just wondering from memory, do you see differences in the online motorcycling community from what you're used to from the, let's call it, the general population?
Definitely, there's a lot of differences, because motorcycling is really about meeting people in the real world, whereas in other social networks, there's rarely the expectation that you might actually connect with the person in real life. What we've tried to do with Eat, Sleep, Ride, and what we find in the communities around the app, is they're very local. So it's who is near you, who is nearby, who are the people in your area. So you have an opportunity to actually meet these people and go out for a ride. That's, I think, is a lot different, because it makes for a much friendlier environment when you know you can actually, you might meet that person in real life, then, right. Oh, I can just say whatever I want in a social sort of context, and flame wars can develop, et cetera. You don't see that happening as much in a community where people have the likelihood that they'll actually meet.
That's so interesting. It's so obvious when you say it, because it really is different. And it's even I do find, though, in online forums for motorcycling, that there's a slightly elevated level of civility. But maybe it's the same. Maybe it's for the same reason.
Like, I find, for example, like the difference between Eat, Sleep, Ride and Reddit, for example. Like, on Reddit, you get a lot of people who may never ride a motorcycle, but who might want to be involved in a motorcycle community, or if you're on other social networks or other biker platforms, you could never ask somebody for help. You couldn't be out on the road somewhere and be in trouble and say, oh, you know, can I ask someone on Reddit to come and help me? Which you can do in the type of platform, in the type of community that we have at Eat Sleep Ride. And you can also do potentially with some of the niche communities, like niche bike communities that are centered around a certain type of bike or a certain type of riding. If you needed help, you could go on to the community and say, hey, I need this, I need that, can someone help me? And there's a much greater chance that someone will say, yeah, I can help you out. And that makes a big difference, I think.
Yeah, I've heard stories like this, especially among sort of long distance riders, people who, find somebody in a town of thousands of miles away from where they live, who drove them to a dealer to pick up a part or rescued them in some way. I always find those stories kind of inspiring. And I mean, I hope I'll never need that kind of help, but it's cool to know it's there. I want to poke a little bit at this sense of this idea that we are somehow different from other activity-based communities. Over the years, I've tried a bunch of stuff on my way to finding motorcycles. And I skied a bit, and I was a cyclist for a long time, and I rode horses for a bunch of years, really quite badly. And then I found finally the thing that I love the most, which is riding motorcycles. And the most striking contrast that I've observed in this activity is that the community is how to put it exactly. There's a presumption that we're all brothers and sisters. So in other words, if I would walk into a room full of equestrians, there was immediately a sense of competition. Are you English or Western? Or do you, hunter jumper, an eventer? Are you a natural horsemanship person? Or do you, there was a strong sense of division and kind of social competition. And when you walk into a room full of motorcycle riders, they're all family immediately. Does that resonate for you? Has that been your experience?
Yeah, I think so. I think for sure. It's, like many riders, I started riding to fulfill, a personal need or desire. Some people start riding because they have a few friends that ride, and then other people, they just need to get from point A to point B faster, cheaper, better. But whatever the reason, once you start riding, you quickly realize that with motorcycling, it's a bit of a different context because you're no longer a stranger among motorcycle riders. And really the only thing you need is a motorcycle to become a member. And you can always feel comfortable in any environment where, people are on two wheels. So I think it's probably similar to a bunch of different type of niche activities. But I think what's different with motorcycling is, I guess everyone who rides quickly understands the secret, and that along with that secret, which is like motorcycling is an awesome experience, an awesome way to get around. It gives you an incredible sense of freedom, comes a vulnerability. You're still vulnerable on the road. And when motorcyclists meet each other, that secret and that vulnerability, I think, is what creates this camaraderie, where we know we might need each other's help, where we're always paying the help forward. Brings us together, I think.
That's interesting. I know that you're not one of these people who's been riding for 100 years, so maybe this is fresh in your mind. Was there a moment that you can recall discovering this?
Well, it's interesting because I feel it all the time. Like, it's almost every time I go out, I feel it. One time in particular, I was heading the wrong direction. I was, my phone was buzzing like mad to tell me that I was going in the wrong direction. Like, Eat Sleep Ride knew, the app knew I was going in the wrong direction, but I didn't know I was going in the wrong direction. And I pulled over and I stopped, to check my phone, check the map to see where I was. And then when I looked up, another rider on the exact same bike as mine, a Triumph Street Triple, he just stopped and said, hey, are you okay? And it wasn't weird. It wasn't intimidating. It wasn't like, oh, this strange man just stopped on the side of the road to ask me if I needed help. It was like, wow, I'm not alone. And every time I go out riding, I feel that on one level or another.
That's interesting. I recall being in a discussion online about a particular tribe of motorcyclists. It was cruiser riders, as it happens, but it's not very important who they were. And someone actually said, and it felt like a profound moment, by way of explaining why they all dress the same, he said, nobody wants to be alone. Almost exactly the words that you just used. And yet, motorcycle riding, you think of as being a kind of solitary activity, right? The meme of the motorcyclist is this kind of lone wolf, you know, out there facing the elements, you know, fearlessly on their own. And yet this kind of idea of knowing you're not alone out there seems to pop up all the time. It's interesting that you say that and you still feel it.
Yeah. And it's also, I think it also has something to do with sort of like a historical context with motorcycling. Like I say, I haven't been riding for long, but when I talk to people that have been riding for a very, very long time, they talk about the community in a different context, because it's only been in the last few decades that the technology on the motorcycle has made the machine so reliable. Like in the past, few decades, you couldn't really ride alone. Anything could happen. You know, you could lose your shaft drive. You could lose a crankcase. You could the bike wouldn't start, or the bike could be pissing oil. You could find yourself broken down in the middle of nowhere with no easy or affordable way to get home. And, you know, motorcycles tended to break down a lot and often. So you needed a buddy to go riding with. And it was, you know, risky endeavor riding alone. So that, again, you know, that vulnerability connected riders. And you always needed to be friendly with other riders, because you knew that you might get into trouble and you needed help. So I think that brought people together as well. That made the community something that people relied on and treated very, very carefully, very respected, I guess, in a way.
That's so interesting. So it's part of our history. What do we get out of it now? I mean, I get on my bike and go for a ride. It never occurs to me that it's going to break down. It never crosses my mind. What do we get out of it now that we don't have that practical need anymore?
Yeah, I think it's a solo activity, in essence, motorcycling. I mean, it always has been. It's just, you know, it's you and your bike and you're alone, but you know that you have a community behind you. And I mean, I don't pretend to understand all the different motorcycle communities there. The more I learn about different communities, the more complex and vast and deep and complicated and fascinating they are. And there's as many tribes in motorcycling as there is, you know, civilizations, communities among people who don't ride. You know, it's just very complicated. There's a lot going on. But whenever I find myself in a group of motorcycle riders, I don't feel like I'm a stranger. I guess like as we grow older, you know, I don't have a ton of friends. And when I connect with people on the level of motorcycling, the friendship just, you know, it's a mutual sort of, it's a really powerful connection. So we become friends because we love to ride, and we sustain our friendships because we love to ride. And some of the people that I've met riding, I would never have been able to meet otherwise than through riding. So it's kind of like a series of tangible and intangible things, I think, that brings the motorcycle community together.
You mentioned tribes, and that brings up a really interesting point. To the outside observer, you would look at the world of motorcycling and you would say that it's almost like a balkanized. There are adventure riders, and there's people who ride retro style bikes, and there's hipsters, and there's dirt bike riders, and there's cruiser riders, and you know, they all have their own modes of dress and their own style of motorcycle, and you got to dress to match the bike, and some of them even have their own music, you would think this is the most fractured society on earth, almost like a little metaphor for the real thing. And yet somehow we rise above that. Why is that?
Well, I think motorcycling and the freedom that comes with motorcycling allows us to always be defining ourselves. And I think as humans, we're always defining ourselves. And depending on the type of motorcycle we ride at any particular time, we can define ourselves a little bit differently. We can play with those definitions. And that creates a lot of freedom as well. And I think when you add a lot of passion to that narrative and you add values to that as well, and I think that the style and the ethos, you know, changes slightly. And the more I think about it, and this is going to sound probably ridiculous, but the more I think about it, the more I realize that the lines among the tribes actually divide themselves on how they perceive safety. So the gear that you wear, like whether you're at GAT or not, how fast you ride, whether you're a squid, you know, or not, the gear that you wear, because motorcycling is intrinsically, it is a dangerous activity. So depending on how you kind of perceive safety, you align yourself with a different type of group. And then the gear, the wardrobe, the look also could fall into that. Now, I don't know if that's right or I'm over, you know, philosophizing. But it seems to me like there's many different ways that we divide ourselves in the motorcycle world, and many motorcycle riders actually belong to a number of different tribes. They wouldn't belong to just one. They'd be like, oh, here's my race community, here's my street riding community, here's my vintage community, here's my dirt riding community. So the freedom to go and to feel like you belong in any one of those communities, as long as we're on two wheels, that's pretty amazing too, you know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you make it sound like self-expression more than kind of affiliation. You make it sound like something we have the freedom to, you know, move among paradigms just because we're in the mood for it.
Yeah, I think that that's a part of it. And there's a lot of freedom in that, right? You can be anything, anyone, any way that you want to be. And that's pretty great. You're not an accountant when you're out riding a motorcycle. You're not, you know, you're not a construction worker. You're a rider, and you belong to a riding community. And it doesn't matter what job you do. Nobody really even asks you what job you do, right? That's never part of the conversation. And there's freedom in that.
That word keeps coming up, and I have to confess, it kind of resonates for me. I, you know, on the one hand, I will admit that I do dress differently when I'm riding my scrambler than, you know, when I'm riding my GS. But, you know, and that's a conscious choice, and that seems kind of lame. But on the other hand, it is fun. It is fun to feel free to do that. It is fun to get up in the morning and say, which bike do I want to ride today? If you're somebody who's lucky enough to own more than one, and everybody, freedom is the right word. That's a really interesting insight. I had never thought of it that way before. Do you have more than one bike? Do you have multiple identities on two wheels?
Not really. I mean, I ride a dirt bike and I ride a street bike, and I don't really feel like I am just me. And I see myself, like, I'm a very friendly and outgoing person. So I pretty much talk to everybody who rides. I don't have a lot of the preconceived notions about dirt bike riders or cruiser riders or sport bike riders. For me personally, I'm curious and fascinated by all the motorcycle tribes. And really the way I look at it is like there's one set of roads and we're all on them. So as long as you're on two wheels, you know, I want to hang out with you. I want to get to know you. I want to ride with you. And I feel like I can learn something from every motorcycle rider I meet.
What an awesome way to look at it. Do you wave? Are you a waver?
Yes. Yes. I like to wave. Yeah. When I started riding, I was told point blank, like, you wave. That's part of motorcycle riding. You have to wave, period. And I was also told that, you know, some cruiser riders may not wave back. And when I first started riding, actually, I didn't really know how to wave, so I didn't care if people waved back or not. I was just practicing my wave. I was doing big waves, and I looked a bit silly because I didn't really know how to wave. And most of the time, for, you know, no matter how nerdy my waves were, almost everybody waved back at me. And what I realized is those few times when they didn't wave back, despite the smallness of the gesture, it felt like a rejection. You know, I felt rejected. So I always wave. And now I have devised like a two-finger salute. And I feel really cool now with my wave. And I can even do like a bit of a wave in a turn. So I enjoy that. I think that, you know, in the city, there's less waving going on around among motorcycle riders. There's more sort of head nodding and people acknowledging each other on the road. And I think it kind of goes back to the secret handshake of the community. It says you belong no matter who you are or what you ride, and you're among friends. So, you know, I feel really good about the wave.
You're not alone. Yeah, I do too. And everything that you said resonated for me. I also worked on my own personal version of it. I was also proud when I could start waving in curves. And I don't take it hard when people don't wave in the city because, if you know, sometimes you just got to clutch, right? So the nod works. But I have exactly the same relationship with it. And I have to say, it still kind of hurts my feelings a little if somebody doesn't wave back.
I can relate.
Yeah. So I understand that a few years ago, or maybe not even a few, maybe a couple of years ago, you did the Babes Ride Out event. Is that right?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I am totally in favor of more women riding more motorcycles. That is clear. And the Babes Ride Out does a terrific job at contextualizing and empowering women to ride on their own, which I think was, you know, really what attracted me to the Babes Ride Out. But I also think that you can have a women-focused event without excluding the guys, because the guys, you know, that support and ride with us, I like riding with the guys. So I had a really great time, and I was really inspired at the Babes Ride Out to see so many young women riding. It was awesome. And it is a different type of vibe when you just have women riding. Than, you know, when you have guys around. But personally, I like having the guys around. I feel it's more inclusive and it feels more real to me. But I think it's different for everyone. But like I said, it was really, really encouraging to see so many young women interested in riding that it made me feel great. It made me feel like I was, part of a whole other subculture, which is in motorcycling, which is, you know, the women only riders. So it was just exposing me to another group of riders and another type of riding that I hadn't experienced before. So it was great.
It struck me from reading the press reports, you know, magazine articles, and so forth, that it had a real emotional edge to it. Was that, did you experience that?
Not really, not for me. Emotional in what sense? Like kumbaya?
No, maybe not that so much. Maybe it was, maybe it had something to do with courage. Maybe it had to do with, you talked earlier about how important it is to us to not feel alone and how this is a dangerous and vulnerable position to be in, to be on a motorcycle. And somehow that took on extra weight when you were talking about, you know, a group of people that we think about a lot these days as being, somehow victimized sometimes by our culture.
Well, I think that, you know, as a woman who is pretty free to be able to do all the things that I like to do, I take some of these things for granted, that I can go out and ride and I, you know, there's nothing really stopping me from doing all the things that I want to do. So like I said, maybe I take that idea for granted, but I did feel when I was at the Babes Ride Out and surrounded by all these women and all these women riding and especially young women riding, I was like, damn, you know, this is cool. This is really cool. This is really great. And I think more women riding is great for everybody. The guys have more fun when the girls are riding with them, and the girls have more fun when they're out on the road feeling empowered and engaging in this incredibly wonderful sport. And it just brings more diversity to the community to welcome women to it. I just think that mixed events are for me just a little bit more interesting. I don't need the like ladies only events, but at the same time, they are very comfortable and comforting, and you know, you can feel like you don't have to be too, you know, you don't have to be too masculine, you know? So right. I guess it's hard to explain. I'm having trouble finding the words. I found that it was a really terrific experience overall, and I would encourage anybody to go and, you know, do those kind of rides, because you come away from those rides feeling really empowered.
Interesting. And is that so it obviously you believe it's important for the sport for more women to become motorcyclists. Is it simply because you feel they've been excluded somehow, or is there something more here that motivates this cause?
Well, I do think women are excluded in a number of different ways from motorcycling. You know, the gear, for example, it's catered to men. I mean, there's 85% male, 15% female overall. So because of those numbers, you know, the bikes maybe are less suitable for women. They're, you know, it's harder to find a smaller displacement bike that has the riding and seating position that I might like. You know, on some bikes, it's really hard for me to change, cancel the signal switch because my hands are too small, like little tiny things. The seating position and comfort, the gear, you know, it all adds up. And when you have an industry that is mostly focused on the number one customer, which is currently male, then yeah, you do feel excluded as a female. But I think with more and more women riding and entering the sport and customizing their own bikes and fixing their own bikes and introducing new products into the market for, you know, aftermarket for motorcyclists and for motorcycling and for other women, I think it just creates a way more interesting industry and community. So I think everybody wins by welcoming women into the sport.
And you would say the same thing probably about young riders in general, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Young riders, for sure. I mean, the only thing really keeping young riders out of motorcycling is the exorbitant insurance rates. You know, the cost of insurance is really the number one reason that keeps young people out of the motorcycle industry. And it's really quite unfortunate. I think it's an issue that needs to be tackled all over Canada, you know, the U.S. Many European countries handle it differently with graduated licensing. That makes it more accessible, more attainable, because you're insured based on the graduated licensing. In North America, you can just go out and get any size motorcycle. And if you're between the ages of 16 and 20, you're big liability. And rightfully or wrongfully, the insurance companies see you as a big liability. And so the cost to insure your motorcycle is exorbitant. It makes it really difficult for young riders to get into the sport.
Yeah, no doubt. I can't believe, especially here in Canada, what motorcycle insurance costs, even if you're, you know, gray-haired and calm, never mind full of piss and vinegar. So young riders, it seems to me, and maybe I'm generalizing here, but it seems to me that the urban thing has caused a huge rejuvenation in the sport, you know, the sort of customs and the, you know, that I'm trying to avoid saying hipster, but there probably is not a way to do that. In the sense that we're seeing bikes on the road that were never on the road before. We're seeing styles of gear that we have never seen before. We're seeing an attitude that we've never seen before. And it all feels, you know, first of all, like a new tribe. And secondly, like fresh, you know, like fresh air. Have you experienced that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Young adults, I guess the industry calls them young adults, young riders. They're getting more and more into motorcycling because younger people, especially through, you know, the information technology, industries are making more money. They're making their own money at a younger age, and they can go out and afford to buy the machines. Sometimes they're picking up machines, older machines from parents and friends, vintage machines, because they're cheaper to insure. So that gets them into motorcycling. So there's different kind of doorways, different avenues for young people to get into motorcycling. And they're smart. young people are smart. They know that it's a faster, cheaper, better way to get around. If you're one person, it's a lot more effective to get around on two wheels than it is on four. You're using, less resources. Your carbon footprint is lower. It's more enjoyable. It's more fun. They're not as affected by, propaganda or some ideas of, this is too dangerous, or, you might be crazy to ride a motorcycle. They make their decisions for themselves. They go out, they get the training, they get the bikes. And, I think it's a real viable solution, and young people understand that. So it's really great to see more young people in the sport.
Yeah, I think so too. There's lots and lots of grumpy old men riding motorcycles who get a little bit judgmental about this sort of thing. But I remember when I was in Los Angeles this past winter, I walked past a parking lot, an empty parking lot, where there was a guy, a young guy, had to be in his 20s, and he was wearing all of the right things for a cafe racer kind of, that kind of aesthetic, and riding a Bonneville. And so far I'm describing a stereotype that, that we might or might not choose to judge. But here's the punchline. This guy was doing tight little figure eights and practicing emergency stops for like an hour. Hmm. Isn't that awesome?
That is awesome.
I feel humbled by that. And it just sort of reminded me how important it is that that we don't keep this sport to ourselves. So you've got an event coming up, which might be the biggest, giantest waving experience in motorcycling history, called Sync Ride. Tell me about that.
The ultimate wave. Well, the idea for the Sync Ride came from a number of discussions that I don't know if you could get a sense, but that, we feel that motorcycling makes a positive impact, not only on a person's mental health, but creates a real positive impact on society in general. So we believe motorcycles are a force for good in the world. And motorcyclists, we realize, ride for a lot of different causes. There's this charity, there's that charity. I think I read some research once that motorcyclists raise more money for charities than any other sort of visual group.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so we thought, well, maybe motorcyclists should think about riding for a cause that is, very close to all of our hearts, which is motorcycle safety. It's our own safety. And that's how the Sync Ride idea was born. Now, we've never really believed that riding in large groups is safe. So what we tried to do at Eat Sleep Ride is create an opportunity for people, whether they ride alone or with a few buddies or with a small group, they know they have the community in their pocket. So the idea was, get out and ride, get your friends to go out and ride, and then you can feel that there's a whole global synchronized community of motorcycle riders riding at the same time as you are. So given that May is Motorcycle Safety Month around the world, and for many people, it might be their first ride of the season. So on the last Saturday in May, which is May 27th, what we want to do is invite motorcycle riders to just get out and ride, kickstands up around the world at the same time, 10 a.m. Eastern time on the planet. And basically by downloading the free Eat Sleep Ride app, they can check in, and we can synchronize the most number of riders riding around the planet at the same time. And I guess whether you're riding solo or you're riding with a buddy, the opportunity is to sort of round out Motorcycle Safety Month with being seen. And we just thought it would be really cool, whether you're riding with somebody down the street or whether someone on the other side of the planet is riding, we're all sort of riding together and we're all being seen. And I think for a long time, the narrative in many countries where motorcycling is not accessible year-round has been like, okay, motorcyclists are danger seekers who deserve what they get. And we believe that we need a new narrative that goes something like this. Motorcycling is safe and it's a viable and powerful transportation solution. And when policymakers make room for motorcyclists, we increase safety and we reduce urban gridlock for all road users. So we think that motorcycling can make a positive impact on the environment, on the economy. And I mean, if motorcyclists don't ride for motorcycle safety, who will? So that's the idea of the Sync Ride.
That's awesome. Are you getting some good buzz about it?
Well, we just started promoting the Sync Ride. So May, as we hit May, we'll be releasing 7 videos. So we made 7 short films with some really inspiring motorcycle riders about how they ride. And we hope that this will inspire other people to go and get their groups together and get them to go out and ride on May 27th, 10 a.m. So join the Sync Ride.
I will be out there. It's funny. I read a piece in the newspaper today about Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook fame, thinking that the future of the internet is actually in the real world. And I feel like you guys have beaten him to the punch by several steps. I can't imagine how exciting it would be to be part of this vast, digitally networked but real motorcycle ride. I'm kind of excited, actually. Which I guess sort of brings me around to the final question. What do you think the future looks like? I mean, the future of the sport is going to be in the hands of people who are digital natives who will not find this a radical thought. Where do you think they're going to take us?
It's such a big question. And I was asking a bunch of riders what they thought sort of leading up to this conversation. I think in the among millennials and young adults, we know that young people are going to be looking for solutions, and motorcycling is an amazing solution, especially for those people who are coming off two-wheel vehicles, bicycle riding in cities. We're seeing a lot of those riders who, you know, they want to reduce their carbon footprint, but they still want to go out of the city, so they're buying motorcycles to get them there. And as far as like the future of motorcycling goes, with all the different technologies, with self-driving vehicles on the horizon and AI being something that's going to impact motorcycling for sure, I think we're probably in the next 20 years be entering the golden age of motorcycling. I mean, when self-driving vehicles are on the road, I mean, this would be the safest time for motorcycle riders. We'll be able to be seen by smart cars. And does that mean that we'll be able to go further and faster than ever before? At the same time, when you look into the future, when all the roads start becoming dominated by self-driving vehicles, then we'll be relegated to human driving roads only. And when there's no more driver's licenses being handed out, you know, where would that leave motorcycle riders? So I think that it's a really interesting time for the motorcycle industry, and we need to be having these conversations and be talking about motorcycle riding and how we are going to grow and maintain the sport in the industry and where we're going to be, you know, fitting in to the new world road order. I don't know the answer, I'm afraid.
It sounds to me like community is going to be an important part of, you know, kind of finding that answer, though.
Absolutely. It's going to be our voice. I mean, the power of community is that we have a platform where we can be heard, where we can come together. And I think in terms of digital technology, we're just scratching the surface of the power of community. When industrialization happened we became networked. So the opportunity to be networked is one level. And then building on that networking is the power that the community enables us. I don't think we've actually scratched the surface of what that means yet. So all this to say, again, you know, I don't know what the future holds, but I hope that by connecting with other motorcycle riders and by continuing to, you know, push motorcycling forward and encourage legislators to make room for motorcycle riders on the road, I think that's going to keep the industry alive.
I love your optimism. I'm motivated. I think that's a great answer. Nobody knows what the future holds.
if you think about it in cities, how many more bicycle riders are on the roads because of bicycle lanes? There's way more bicycle riders in the last decade riding in urban centers all over the world, and it's all because they feel safer. Well, why can't we feel safer on highways as motorcycle riders? Why can't we have special lanes? Why can't we have priority when it comes to connecting us from one city to another city on the back roads, on the highways? That's all possible through legislation, and we can feel safer on the roads if we encourage our legislators to understand the powerful solution, the transportation solution that motorcycling is. So I do hope that in North America especially, we'll be able to have a greater voice and enable more riders to ride more often. You know, when you look in Europe at the advancement for motorcycles and the priority for motorcycles, especially in the UK, I mean, research has shown that by encouraging more motorcycle riders to ride, we reduce congestion for all road users. I mean, that's really powerful data.
Yeah, pretty persuasive. And, you know, frankly, I'd rather be on a bike than I'd rather be on a bike than in a self-driving car. Well, Marina, this has just been fantastic. I really appreciate your time and your insights. You've given me a ton to think about. I'm looking forward to Sync Ride, and I'll make sure that in our show notes on the website that's going to be here any minute, that everybody knows how to find the information they need to be part of it.
Thanks again, Bruce. It's been an honor.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Have a great day. It seems so obvious when you say it. And I guess it wasn't to me. We're a community because we're vulnerable. And it might be even less obvious how that leads to joy, but I think it's got something to do with the fact that this sense of brotherhood and sisterhood is what makes riders feel free in the face of that vulnerability. We're all in this together, and nobody else gets it, and that makes it great. Thinking about this reminded me of a scrap of Shakespeare that I recall from high school. It's the speech that Henry V gives to his troops just before a great battle. The one that goes, "We few, we happy few, we band of brothers." It ends with, "And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here." Well, I kind of feel that way after every ride. And if you don't think Shakespeare has anything to do with motorcycles, well, maybe it's time to rent Sons of Anarchy again. Thanks for listening. You'll find show notes on this episode at thismotorcyclelife.com. And that's also how you can reach me if you have questions, comments, or suggestions. And you can find me on Instagram at ThisModoLife, where I like to post pictures of bikes I find on the street. Maybe I'll find yours someday. To take us home, here's a recommendation for your This Motorcycle Life playlist. It's from an Australian band called The Giants. The biker life plays a huge role in this band's music and in their view of the world. I thought this episode needed a fist-pumping anthem, and The Giants came through. The song is called Freedom Road, and you can find it wherever you like to get your music. In the meantime, feel free to get your lighter out and keep staying alive out there.
Come all you outlaws and believers. Come all you angels of the night. Fly your colors is your right. I saw you flying like an eagle all across the southern sky.